grace and faith were used on us, not by us.
The gospel of grace.
You are the thing that was in the mind of God.
The gospel of peace.
This plan was put together by God and Jesus before the creation of anything else.
That was Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, May 18, 2018, broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we love every train of thought visiting our station of freedom. We're coming to you today from the Gospel Revolution studios right here in Eva, Alabama, where we say that a text without context is a pretext. But right now from Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with more consistent, persistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. Hello, Mr. Michael Williams. How are you?
I am wonderful today, Don. I understand that things aren't so pleasant there at your home right now. You guys have an air conditioning problem.
We do. I think that, actually what we're doing is hoping that the rapture will come sooner rather than later and take us out of this hell that we're in. Yeah.
At least the updraft from it, right? And pull a breeze through the house.
At the very least.
Even if you miss it, you know.
Yep. So, there are storms predicted today. Perhaps that'll cool the place down for us, hopefully, anyway. Michael, how are things in your neck of the woods?
Everything's very good. We are recording a day late because of, I'm sure, people who turn on the Weather Channel have seen we were under a river of tropical rainfall. It was pretty bad, and the reason we had to wait is because the rain on my roof was so loud that we couldn't record.
Man, in the outback, rain on a tin roof, there is no music that can compete. No,
yeah,
it takes all the Mozarts and Beethovens and rock and roll stars and puts them into one, and it is still better. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, a lot of people like that.
Well, I think we'll get straight into the mailbag.
Let's go.
And the mailbag starts almost predictably nowadays with Doug Salinen.
Yeah.
And Doug wrote, Don and Mike, and I think you got a copy of this as well. Here is the lowdown on my family.
Yes, I think this is actually very good because you keep hearing about some of these guys and you don't really realize some of these folks are all related, and this is just a whole clan up there. So
I think it's more than just related. I think it might be a bit like Tasmania, but let's or West Virginia, but let's read on. Here's a lowdown on my family. So now we're going to get some juicy bits. Pat Salinen Rouse. Mm-hmm. Is my mother. I'm her son, Doug Salinen. Bernie Rouse is my uncle, Pat's brother. Now, I'm just going to read this slowly and let it sink in because I'm pretty sure.
I know.
Yeah. He sometimes emails into the podcast. Yes, he does. Daniel Rouse is my cousin. He's my uncle's son, who is still pastor of Dan's old church, Pat's other brother. Daniel Rouse is Pat's nephew. This is starting to sound like I am my own grandpa. I mean, I'm not even halfway through this. My other uncle, oh, there's more, is the pastor who I was youth pastor. My other uncle is the pastor for whom I was youth pastor in his church. I graduated Rema, or as some of our people call it, Copeland Hagen, in 1993. Another brother of Pat. Not sure I understand that. Apparently, Pat's got more brothers and she takes breaths. She ran the bookstore that I mentioned and also taught in the church. I think it's a sister of Pat. I could be wrong. And also taught in the church. We were in the Word of Faith at that time. We both left the church around 2000, roughly the same time I did. basically at the same time within a week. Okay. My mum and dad retired to their hometown, and mum started to share the teachings of the GR with Daniel, who was pastor of a church up there, which Daniel I don't know, but I'm gonna guess it was his cousin, whose father was a fettler in the railways and knew this preacher who was really good at crossword puzzles and ran a, I tell you.
Now many, many years ago when I was 23, I was married to a widow who was pretty as could be. This widow had a grown-up daughter, had hair of red. My father fell in love with her, and soon the two were wed. This made my dad my son-in-law and changed my very life. My daughter was my mother, 'cause she was my father's wife. To complicate the matter, even though it brought me joy, I soon became the father of a bouncing baby boy.
My poor little brain is just dissolving. Who was pastor of a church up there? Just thought I'd enlighten you. Doug Salonen. Doug, no, you did not enlighten me. You did not enlighten me, Doug. Doug, I need light and love, and I got neither of them there. I don't even know where to take. Here, have a listen to this. This is what it sounded like to me.
My little baby then became the brother-in-law to Dad, and so became my uncle, though it made me very sad. For if he was my uncle, that also made him the brother of the widow's grown-up daughter, who, of course, was my stepmother.
I'm my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa.
It sounds funny, I know, but it really is so.
For I'm my own grandpa.
My father's wife then had a son that kept him on the run. And he became my grandchild, for he was my daughter's son. My wife is now my mother's mother, and it makes me blue. Because she is my wife, she's my grandmother too.
I'm my own grandpa.
It sounds funny, I know, but it really is so.
I'm my own grandpa.
Now if my wife is my grandmother, then I'm her grandchild. And every time I think of it, it nearly drives me wild. For now I have become the strangest case you ever saw. As husband of my grandmother, I am my own grandpa.
I'm my own grandpa. I'm my own grandpa.
It sounds funny, I know, but it really is so.
For I'm my own grandpa.
Mike, what do you reckon, mate? Does this make any sense to you?
Well, you do get lost in the middle of it. It's like trying to figure out your great uncle. Is it three times removed, or is the people or descendants, is it your third cousin? You got to know how to figure these things out. And I'm one who studies ancestry, and I tell you, there's still parts of it that get me boggled. But yeah, no, you didn't really help us at all. Now, the fact that I know Pat, and I know who Doug is, and I know, I know all these people. So,
and this still didn't help you, right?
Still didn't help me. No, I used to know. I used to know who they were and how they related, but now I don't.
Oh God, too funny. Well, and I suppose it's a good time as any to move to a question that Pat Salonen Rios. I think she's the mother of the one who had the church, whose son was at the bookstore when the other sister was. In the word of faith. Anyway, it doesn't matter. She asked 2 weeks ago, I think it was, can we trust Dr. Strong to have designated whether the word sin is a noun or a verb in all cases? So there I am, editing out the show last week, and I heard Mike say, well, it's been good for me. And it was almost like he was trying to walk back what I said. And then I realized that what I said was not entirely accurate, Pat. So, here is my I was wrong moment. You can trust Dr. Strong to tell you whether it was a noun or a verb. You can't trust Dr. Strong to actually write the noun or the verb in there. For that, you need something else, because he generally just puts the root of the word. So, for example, I am going to run. Run is a verb. I went for a run. Run is a noun. Same word, same spelling. One's a verb, one's a noun, dependent on its usage and context. Same kind of goes for Dr. Strong. In Strong, Strong would just say run, to walk very fast or something like that, and a noun. But then you got ran or running. Or I want to go for a run, future tense. And there are all these kind of little affectations that Greek puts on words. So I was wrong. You can take Dr. Strong fairly well to give you the part of speech. It is adverb, adjective, verb, noun, etc. But don't trust him to give you the full word. Now, you say, well, heck, that's all I really wanted. Well, great.
Yeah, exactly.
As Mike said last week, it's done him well and it hasn't let him down. So that's excellent. For just that, you can take it. But we looked at Sean Smith and I looked at a statement that I'll put my laws in their heart or something of that nature. When you see the Old Testament reference to that, law is a singular. When you yes. look at the New Testament reference, laws are plural. Now, did either Paul get it wrong or the Catholic translators get it wrong? Who got it wrong? So there is a good case where Strong's would just not be up to the it is not for that job. Pat Sellon and Rouse, I expect your $50,000 with alacrity and dispatch. I expect it this week, and if I don't get it, I'm going to ask all of those. Obviously, you've got enough people in the family there. I mean, if all of the people in your family sent a dollar each, we'd get our $50,000. So, all right.
We have an entire gospel revolution taking place out of one house. So,
oh, isn't it wonderful?
And believe me, that's really true. Pat's been around for about 30 years. Well, she's been around a little longer than that. But I'm
glad you didn't just say she's been around.
She's been around for about 30 years with the gospel, if I'm correct. And she may have to send us a letter, like her son's letter, correcting us about all that, explaining.
Correcting your son, yeah.
when, how, and where. But Pat has had like the rest of us, just as she is very dedicated to understanding the gospel and doing research of her own, written her own book. We've got to start advertising her book, Don. I've been meaning to do that for a long time. And
Pat Sellon, would you please send us details of your book so that we can put it on on the roster here?
Yeah, we do need to. And but a drastic, oh man, when this girl heard the gospel, she and her husband, just a radical, radical influence. It has been just beautiful. And Pat, just to say hello. She listens to every PowerCast. Of course, the whole fam damily does. So.
Well, at least I haven't got a Bass Ackwood.
Yeah, exactly. So, thank you guys, all of you. We love you to pieces. We enjoy you. There is a sense of humor in this family that I don't know if it exactly where it came from, but you can tell with Pat, most likely it came from her. I just don't know. But it's a delight to talk to anybody that I've ever met in this family. It's hard to imagine any of them being legalist with this wonderful happy disposition all of them have that I've encountered. It's like, how does that look on a legalist, you know? And believe me, they've got plenty of legalists in their family too. So,
family, you're hearing some glitches. We don't know what's causing it. Nothing at my end has changed, except I've had an IT tech in the house for AT&T who told me that suddenly my TV Wi-Fi was jacked up. He's changed a few things. I don't know what the story is. I'm recording this on a MacBook Air, and Apple have taken it on themselves to say MacBook Airs do not need a direct LAN input, an internet input. So I'm running the best and fastest router I know how. I can't change my location, so what comes in through the wires from AT&T I'm stuck with. But there is some glitches here, and if you'll just bear with us this week, we very much appreciate your patience. How would you like to donate cash to the Gospel Revolution without ever putting your hand in your pocket? You would? Then here's how to do it. Go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the donate link. But instead of going to donations, go to Amazon Donations. Simply follow the instructions there, and Amazon will then automatically donate 0.05% of everything you ever purchase from them again. Don't forget to change your browser bookmarks to take you to Amazon Smile instead of the regular Amazon page. From there on, you will become a regular financial contributor to the Gospel Revolution. It's just that easy. Now, we got some feedback from past shows, mate. Barry Laney said about James the Jerk, he said one word, he said, wow.
Mm-hmm.
We've got more feedback from James the Jerk than, golly, than any other program I think we've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Then he says, Barry Laney said about the episode 180504, Sharing Hell, he said, preach it. Barry, I wish. See, here's the problem. We just don't have the time in a 1.5 hour show to
address all these comments.
yeah. You wordy, verbose, circumlocutive individual, you. Then Yvonne DeClean said something which I thought was both potent and poignant. All she said was a very common thing. She said about. Which one was it? It must have been about I think it was about last week's Taking a Chance podcast. She said, this has been wonderful on so many levels for me to hear. That was it. That's all I needed to hear to make everything that we do in the Gospel Revolution worth every ounce of effort and time we expend on it.
Yes, for sure. I felt that was a very important broadcast that we did. I knew the material we had to cover. We need to remind ourselves of what people have to deal with on a daily basis. On a daily basis in this religious society that we're in. It doesn't make any difference whether you're Catholic, Buddhist, or any of the brands of, tens of thousands of brands of Christianity. This is assaulting people's brains, and it is making life more difficult.
Did you see what Joel preached on this week?
No, I didn't. I didn't have the heart to do it two weeks in a row.
I think it was this week. It was, how badly do you want it? Now,
oh,
last
Lord.
Week, I know, it takes you.
Just the title.
It takes an honest mind some time to get around that. Last week, he preached on, it's not up to you. And this week, obviously, he's preaching, it's all up to you.
Yeah.
Jeez.
That's one pattern I noticed with every preacher, especially in dealing with, they don't know the gospel. So when they get an understanding and they go to the limit with it, then they realized, wow, I've left out seven other principles that I actually adhere to. So next week I got to preach against the thing I preached on last week.
Well, that's understandable because Joel the foal never went, and I called him the foal because you knew his daddy, a real man. But Joel the foal never went to any seminary, never went to a Bible college. He just started preaching one day. So it makes entire sense that he would preach one extreme and then preach the other extreme, see which one gets taken up and loved the most, and then go with it and probably deny down the road that he's ever preached last week's sermon. But it's a deadly, deadly theology. Everything's up to
it
God.
It is indeed.
Golly.
Yeah, and then, of course, yesterday I turned on Andrew Womack.
Oh, you see, you minutes. Do. Do you hit your head with a hammer because it feels so good when it stops? What did our buddy Andrew say?
Well, Andrew was just making sure everybody knew that, you know, and he teaches on grace, but he had every out of context quote from Proverbs, which Proverbs is pretty much, if you're going to quote it, it's going to be out of context. There's not a whole lot of
context. Are you kidding me? You can go from one verse to the next verse, and I mean, you're driving a totally different car in a totally different continent.
Yeah, it really is. But he was quoting mostly verses from Proverbs, but he had it out for somebody. You could just tell he had somebody in mind. And then, of course, maybe me and a whole lot of other people felt that he was addressing us personally, because I certainly got the distinct feeling that he had something in his craw for sure. And these folks are highly disturbed about the gospel that they say means nothing. They seem to have to address it an awful lot.
Isn't it strange that they have to put down something which costs you nothing in favor of something which costs you a lot of work, like what he's doing?
Mm-hmm. For sure. The entire thing was just he caught himself exaggerating his stories, and that's what gave it away, you know, that there was somebody he was trying to get to. And how that if you care about somebody, you avoid contention. Contention's bad. Contention's always bad. Contention is evil. It's, boy, you cause contention, you're in strife. Strife is the devil. And then he said, I just, whenever stuff like that starts, I just back away. I just disengage. Unless, of course, you really love somebody and you just got to speak up because they're about to destroy their life. It's like, this juggling act that I heard on there where it's all of these, some of that, none of these.
That's a good segue. Let me see if I can find it. Andy Stanley. Do you remember Dr. Stanley?
What does this have to do with Andy Stanley?
Okay. I will tell you.
I will wait and be informed.
Well, now, Andy Stanley is the son of Dr. Stanley, who was on TV for many years as a teacher, and Andy's church, I think, is bigger than his daddy's church used to be, but now I read in Pathios, False Dilemmas Divide the Church. At a recent conference on church leadership, Andy Stanley told attendees that church unity is more important than theological correctness.
Oh, wow.
Now you know why this came to mind. His play on words gives him a rhetorical advantage, making it difficult for people to challenge him. I don't think I have to say any more. And a false dilemma, family, is a logical fallacy. Logical fallacies are those things which are, you know, straw men, arguments, red herrings, and so forth. And a false dilemma means when you project only two options and pretend you've got to take one of those two options. A Hobson's choice is a false dilemma. So what he's saying, I'll just read it again, and words fail me, so I guess you'll have to take over, Mike. Andy Stanley told attendees at a recent conference that church unity is more important than theological correctness.
Well, there's an element of truth to that in Christianity, because your choices are from one pile of crap to another pile of crap. So what big deal does it make?
It makes a big difference. If you add a little sugar to crap, it doesn't taste as much like crap. You can put some vanilla essence in there and make it even less like crap. In fact, No. You finish this segment out, and then I'll play it.
Now, how the true dilemma that Christianity is facing, and Don, I've just been becoming very aware of how agitated it's becoming with the gospel revolution. They really are. They're addressing us in sideways, under the table, behind the barn. And I just finally came to the reality, this is eventually going to break out into an all-out assault from every side of Christianity that you can think of against the gospel revolution.
Well, they're bleeding members. I imagine they have to.
They are, and they need someone to blame. And whether we are to blame or not, which I hope we are, they are going to have to find somebody to blame. And the most likely target, which they are constantly confronted with the gospel, it's out there. Oh my gosh, these guys, just like Andrew and I used to teach together. Andrew's the one, he taught in my school. I used to have a week-long school that we would do, and he taught there. And Andrew's the one who lured me in to his Bible school out in Colorado to try to give me enough rope to hang myself. So he, instead, this all turned on him. And I taught on two kinds of righteousness there, and it was the entire school, the entire staff, and I didn't know Gloria Copeland's brother he had invited also to come, because he had set this all up, really put me under for the, once and for all. And he thought that the best way to do that was give me full access, full-throated support in front of his school, and with all of the absolute secure doctrines that he had taught. I know that he was convinced that this would come down like a house of cards on top of me. And that's not what happened. The entire school, all of the staff, every one of them stood for the first time in a standing ovation in his school. And stood and cheered at the end of the teaching. And Andrew hardly knew what to do.
Yeah, I bet that him off.
It was tough. So he invited me out to lunch after that, which I didn't know Gloria Copeland's brother was there. So to divert attention from having to deal with what I just taught, he created a contention between me and Gloria Copeland's brother.
Well, deflection, distraction are always great tools.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, goodness gracious, I don't have a Bible school. He's got a whole Bible school with staff and everything. Why wouldn't you take a speaker who just said things you don't agree with and point out point by point what you disagree with, instead of, oh, let's go out to lunch and smile and everybody's happy, put me at the end of the table, head of the table. He was on my right. Gloria Copeland's brother was on my left. And he said, Mike, by the way, well, he started out with, Mike, he said, I just have a real problem that when I did that Bible school with you, that you spoke up against Ken and Gloria Copeland. And I said, Andrew, I said, I don't remember saying anything against Ken and Gloria. I said, I quoted some of their teachings and had some comments to say about it. And then he tried to draw me into that and then turned and said, by the way, this is Gloria Copeland's brother. And that the same brother that was killed in a motorcycle accident a little bit a few years after that.
You just have to admire the deviousness of the Christian mind.
You know, I want to believe the best because I remember being there. I remember having a good mindset as far as really wanting to help people.
And how did that work out for you?
Well, you get caught up in the whole scheme, you know. In fact, it eventually spit me out altogether into my own ministry.
And what do you say? You say that to be a good Christian, you got to be a good what?
You got to be a good liar. Goodness gracious, when people stand back like this and pull, like Andrew did on his broadcast this week, and just pull verse out of verse after verse after verse out of context. And because he's got a burr in his saddle about somebody individual. And I remember how sickening that was to me, how that pastors would use an entire Sunday sermon to address one individual in the church. Mm-hmm. And everybody else sat there just confused as hell as to what's he talking about. That's how incapable many of these leaders are of addressing conflict, that they use their bully pulpit to address the individual. And man, when I saw that happening, I think I may have done it once. And when it happened and I saw it happening in others, it's like, no, sirree. I will never get in up to a podium and address an individual there and try to correct their doctrine, try to correct them, try to justify myself. I'm not going to do it.
Well, it's an act of cowardice. Bullies are heroes with coward's legs. And if they were face down with this stuff, there's no way that they'd want to have a tete-a-tete, a face-to-face or anything like that, because that is not the way of Christianity. Christianity has had 2 millennia to reform itself, and all it's done is gotten more and more incestuous and more deceitful.
And, you know, part of that also, Don, was played out with Andrew to the T. Andrew never once sat down with me and Andrew Womack ever once sat down with me and explained to me what it was that he disagreed with and why. All he could do was come up with a disagreement that he had with me, quote, putting down the Copelands and doing it in front of Gloria's brother.
Well, it was entrapment.
Oh, it really was. The whole thing.
It's exactly what the Catholic Church did to Luther, Martin Luther.
The invitation to speak in his school was entrapment. The problem is it all backfired. He wound up having to fire most of his staff because he sent out an edict that said if anybody on staff that agrees with Mike Williams, I expect your resignation. And most of his staff resigned. And that happened to Marilyn Hickey. That's just the way these people do this stuff. Marilyn Hickey never once sat down with me and explained to me what it was. She got on TV and bashed me for 6 months on a worldwide broadcast. I know that some of the folks that are just coming in on this, and if they've known these people in the past, I know this is kind of surprising to know the extent of the involvement that I've had with the charismatic movement, the Word of Faith movement, to such degrees to where that I, you know, this is what I did. I spoke at Marilyn Hickey's church more than once, more than a couple of times. And never once in her ability to get on TV and explain and defame my character, accusations of every kind that you could think of, and every one of them were incorrect. I've always said if they had ever actually got one of them right, I would have had to fess up, but they never got one right. They were just coming up with things that they were hoping would stick. And Andrew was the same way. And I tell you, I turn these guys on and I realize I look at them through a little different eyes because, you know, they sound like they're just really dedicated, committed, And I mean, he was just explaining to the nth degree of how to handle things. It's like, dude.
Wouldn't it be fun to see how committed they remained if their money dried up?
Well, that is the thing that they started seeing, I think. I think that's what Andrew saw would happen to his ministry. Because, see, Andrew and I walked together in the desert. We walked along together on walks and stuff. I did this with Jim Richards. I was a big walker. So anytime I was in a meeting or something, I did a several mile walk every day. And Shambach, for goodness sake, I got Shambach out walking through out and about before and after his heart attack.
You don't have any trouble. All you need is faith in God.
You've got to understand, these are people that I admired. I mean, I couldn't even believe I got to be in their presence. And then to be dealt with in this way. So, you know, folks, I also want to say, the only reason that we bring these things up is, number one, I don't have enough sense to stop turning on the TV and flipping on the stations where these guys are.
Could you say that again? Because it's rare for you to say that you're stupid.
No, it really isn't. I've been saying it for a long time.
But it's rare for me to pick up on it like that. I suddenly realize I've been hero worshipping someone who didn't have the brains to turn the TV off.
I have to say you're stupid.
Yeah, I guess
I'm not the stupid one. It's you.
So from one stupid to another.
Enjoy the PowerCast.
Yes.
But we do bring these things up, and I think that it is imperative that we bring them up, because there's a history to this gospel revolution that is a very powerful, palpable, deeply involved. You got to know where the roots of this came from and the conflict that it was born out of. It's important to know your roots. It's important to know the discovery process. It's important for you to know that this has been in direct confrontation to some of the largest ministries on the planet. And they have been confronted with the gospel. They've been confronted with the grace of God. And the only thing that Andrew could do during the time that he was taking all these verses out of context, his summation was, even though it seemed to not have anything to do with it, was the assurance that, you know, homosexuality is wrong. And it just kind of popped up out of nowhere. And then he said, of course, when we speak up about it, of course, we are made out to be judgmental. Of course, he read a verse out of Proverbs where that, the wicked go free and the righteous are judged or something like that. And of course, he said, see, we're the ones that get judged. It's not the wicked. The wicked don't get judged. We get judged. And it's like, oh, come off of it.
What a reach. You know, I don't even know what to say to that. In the Bible, judgment is about straightening out. It's not about condemnation. It's not about the sentencing. It's not about sending people to hell. It's not about that. Judgment has a very strong connotation of setting straight that which is crooked. And who else would benefit most from being set straight from being crooked except the righteous?
Yeah.
I mean, when you take these verses out of context, like you just said, it is. Oh, how convenient!
Yeah, and it's very convenient to leave out all the stories about yourself, about your own family, which I know a lot about Andrew that I'm not going to repeat. But he very conveniently left those out, and of course gave himself leeway to break all the rules. He just said, of course, and you could just see the wheels turning in his head. Ooh, I said that to my son. Oh, I said that to somebody in church. Or I did this. I didn't do what I'm saying. It's somebody else. But if you really love somebody, then you're going to have to. And it's like, come on, dude, come on.
And that you would treat people disparagingly in the name of love. dear God.
Yes. So that to say this, folks, you need to really be aware that, number one, this ministry has been under assault from the Christian community, covertly and overtly. They did it overtly, and just as Marilyn Hickey did on her TV show week after week. These attacks against myself personally, against the gospel, none of these folks, I was one of them. They wouldn't have invited me if I was not one of them. They've violated every one of their own rules about, as they take it out of context, if you see a brother taken in a fault. You see, I did see that they were at a fault, which is what the verses in Galatians are. And I did go and confront them.
Yes, but question is, was that in love?
Yeah, a lot of love. It was it was all motivated by love for them, and thinking that what they really wanted was, like everybody else, they just wanted to know the truth. But when money and prestige are on the line, sometimes the love for the truth gets put on the back burner. You need to be prepared for the fact that anything relating to the Gospel Revolution, Mike Williams Ministries, they're going to go on full on attack. You see, the reason they stopped is they thought that they had put me away. And now they're hearing this resurgence of the most demonic teaching, in their terms, that the world has ever heard. This demonic teaching that God loves everybody, this demonic teaching that Jesus actually accomplished what he said he was going to do, which was do away with sin, which says he actually did it also. The demonic teaching that says that sin was done away with, wasn't modified. I was thinking about that this morning. You know, who would have the audacity to read the scriptures that would say that a Savior was coming to do away with sin, have it taught on before and after the cross that it was done away with, and have the audacity to teach a message that says that Jesus modified sin or gave us a Band-Aid for sin?
He did. He did. According to Christianity, Jesus modified sin so that adultery in pastors would be more acceptable.
And it gets modified constantly, you know, from century to century to generation. It's heartbreaking, to say the least. But you've got to understand, folks, what is in front of us. You've got to understand it. We are not inviting an onslaught of approval. That is not what's going to happen here. I know
we had that opportunity and we left it behind.
We did indeed. But the onslaught, see, I think everybody's still got this, a lot of people still have this church mentality that this is just going to grow to the point to where they're just, wah, you know, and we hit a crescendo and everybody stands back in awe of our growth and the strength. That's not what's going to happen. An all-out attempt to absolutely destroy the Gospel Revolution is what they are in the process of covertly, and it will become overt. They can't resist it.
And I'll tell you why it's doomed to failure. For millennia, two millennia, those who belonged to the church were brain chained. They were not allowed to think for themselves. But now, with the advent of the internet, people are thinking for themselves.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know how far we can push this envelope. I hope we can push it all the way. But once you've heard that bell that cannot be unrung, once you've heard that, once your head catches up with what has always been in your heart, there is no turning back, because the history of Christianity suddenly becomes clear and its motives suddenly become clear. And its practices suddenly become obvious. Mm-hmm. And I could no longer go back to Christianity. See, when I came to America 15 years ago, people were voting with their feet at the rate of 2 million a year leaving the church. That has not gone down.
Yeah.
That has only increased. So we're going to see the flailings of these people. We're going to see them, in all likelihood, because when people get desperate, people say things that they wish they hadn't said. So we're just going to see more and more of that. Remember the old story about the emperor and the emperor's clothes? Well, guess what? The emperor is standing naked in front of us, and we are not going back to him. The emperor has got no clothes. He just doesn't know it yet. And the emperor is far too old to be going out of doors with no clothes. And what he is wearing looks like it could use a darn good ironing.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's no going back, folks. I tell you what, you guys all know my heart. If you want to go back, we'll support you going back.
Yes.
If you want to stay in church, we'll support your staying in church. If you still think you need to confess sins, we will support your need for confessing sins. If you need us to pray for your sicknesses and diseases, we'll pray for your sicknesses and diseases. Because there's truth, and then there's just obstinate points where we dig in our heels. I don't have a point where I'm digging in my heels on anything except the truth of the gospel.
Jesus said, comfort the comfortless.
Yes, and that regardless of their doctrine.
Yeah, if praying in tongues brings you comfort, guess what we're going to do? Now, that doesn't mean we're going to say, well, praying in tongues is right.
Yep.
It's just not a hill we're going to die on.
No.
Because it's not a gospel issue.
No, it is not. And anointing with oil, honey, get the bottles out. We'll put it in spray bottles and spray you down with oil. I mean, we'll make the sign of the cross on your forehead. We'll do whatever you need to bring you comfort in your hour of need, folks. That's what ministry is. Ministry doesn't try to make sure your doctrine's right before they help you. But these folks have to make sure your doctrine's right. Do you agree with them? So, yeah, we don't want to beleaguer this point, but just be aware as we're sharing the gospel with you, there's another world going on there behind the scenes. There is an opposition to the gospel. We are nobody's martyrs. We are not going to sit around and bemoan the fact that this entire evangelical Christian world is, quote, out to get us. But they are. They really are. I mean, after reading Jim Richards' letter, if you don't know that they are, the problem with Jim's letter was he addressed the wrong people, because we've got pastor after pastor after pastor after pastor after pastor who, after being confronted with the truth of the gospel, they just give it up and walk away because they can't handle the distortions and the mind games and the twister that they've been in before. And they all know it's wrong in their hearts. They know it doesn't work until you got enough money coming in, and then you have to maintain that it works because there's such a large amount of money at stake. They all know it doesn't work. They all know it doesn't work. You want to be a believer? Why don't you go for what Jesus said as a believer? You know, let's look around for a few believers this morning. Who is a believer? Who really is a Christian? If that's what it takes to be a Christian, is you got to be a believer. Jesus said, "He that believeth in me, the works that I do shall you do also." Let's look around for some Christians. I've got some water in my kitchen. I need some wine. All I need is a believer. Let's see. We need to get across this river here, so there is no bridge, there's no boat, but hey, all it's going to take is a believer, because they're going to be able to do the same things that Jesus did. Now, I couldn't do it because I'm not a believer, but you could carry me over. Hey, listen, you know, take some of this believing, folks, and help the world. Do some of this stuff. Jesus said, not only will you do the works that I've done, but greater works. We won't even go there. Then Jesus said, and to the same believers, you will ask anything in my name and I will do it.
Do you remember what Gandhi said when somebody, a good friend of his and a Christian missionary to India, a good friend of his, somebody he trusted, a confidant, when he asked Gandhi to become a Christian, Gandhi said, no, mm-hmm. Your Christ I like.
Yeah,
but you Christians are nothing like your Christ.
You're nuts.
Right. Now, Christian believing friends, when it takes a pagan, an infidel, a heathen, a non-believer to point out your shortcomings, and that does not even in the least perturb you, that should tell you something about yourself. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got a lot to get through, and I don't want to impede your progress in this area, but whatever suits you.
Well, let us button this up real quick. So people say, well, if you're not a believer, what are you? I know Christ. I know God. Well, that's audacious. How can you say you know God? I know you, Donna. That's how I know God. You see, the gospel puts this down to where we live. Day to day, moment by moment, this Christian doctrine creates a gap between you and God, and all of its doctrines fill, it's like grout. You want to know what the extent of Christian doctrine is? It's grout. It's filler. It's a perception that the two are not one, and therefore we got to glue them together. We got to get them to come together.
When you buy washing powder has maybe 10% active ingredients and 90% what they call filler.
Yep.
Now, what filler is an extender. It tries to make more out of it than it really is. I tell you what, when people sell dope and you hear about them cutting it down and diluting it with, you know, baby powder or something like that, that's filler.
Yes.
When you buy breakfast cereal, you might have 5% nutrition.
Yeah.
The rest is as nutritious as cardboard because it's filler.
Let me tell you, folks, there is no need for filler between you and God. You are one.
Mate, in both worlds, it works and it makes money. Come on, Michael.
Both worlds, it works to make money. It doesn't work. None of it works. But it does make money. Folks, anybody that tells you that there is something that you need to do that God needs to do, that God will and you won't and you did because he couldn't, or you're one. You are one. No doctrine can hold you together with God.
And remember, if one person has one kind of work for you to do to make you righteous in the eyes of God,
just visit the next corner because there's another church on the other corner. And they will tell you something absolutely opposite.
Okay. I think that if we don't pull ourselves up here, mate, we might just get carried away.
I think we already did that. That train has left the station.
It's bumping, it's bumping, it's bumping in my soul. They're singing and laughing since Jesus. Folks don't understand it. Nor can I keep it quiet. But it's bubbling, bubbling, bubbling.
This week, we had we had a little get together where we put our heads together, and there are a couple of people who've come on board in the administrative sense with the Gospel Revolution. That would be Daniel Rouse and Owen Pratt.
Mm-hmm.
These are names you're going to start seeing around. You will also see other names, but these are two names which we're just going to bring to your attention now. Now, we have what's called a gospel producers group. Most people aren't aware it's there, and that's because it's a secret group, and I intend to keep it secret. Now, in the Gospel Revolution, a producer is somebody who's given something of value to the GR, an executive producer, a producer. You will hear us referring to these people. We give them certificates. These are legitimate certificates which carry weight wherever you use them, on your business card, on your resume. We're told that they work particularly well on LinkedIn. These are for people who want to do something for the gospel. If you don't want to do something for the gospel, just forget what I'm saying. But you'll see that Owen Pratt and Daniel Rouse are now new admins of all of our groups, including the producers group. These people are admins. That means that they have full running rights of these groups. Now, but let me just say this, that in our Friends of Mike Williams in the GR this week, we heard this. One person said the most committed faith and the firmest beliefs are the ones that are able to stand up to rational skepticism and critical response. As a corollary, refusing to test one's ideas is a tacit admission that they likely wouldn't stand up under scrutiny, in which case those beliefs are being held out of preference rather than on the basis of reason. Now, this was somebody who was defending another person in that group who was simply attacking our beliefs. They wanted to come into the group. They didn't have anything to offer the group, positive, except half-truths. And so I responded, that is a half-truth at best. If that were true, I remember this person has said that if you're not, the government uses this, if you've got nothing to be afraid of, what are you worried about? I'm worried about a lot of things. I don't want the government. In America, I've got privacy against illegal search by even the government. But the government uses this kind of faulty reasoning. I'm sorry, America. Australia does exactly the same, as does the UK and Canada. It is not true that if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to be concerned about. Ask all the people who've been jailed wrongly. That's just BS. It's total BS. So I wrote back, that is a half-truth at best. If that were true, then many innocent folks would not be in jail and many politicians would be in jail. It sounds good, I know. But even good BS is still BS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also wrote a post, name something that evangelicalism or charismaniacs teach that isn't in the Bible. And I started off with the sinner's prayer and believe in Jesus so you can go to heaven. And then I said, your turn. Mate, it's the longest, most popular thread we have ever put up.
That's wonderful.
I think it is. Oh, it was too funny. And the things that people brought out. I mean, you don't realize how broken Christianity is until you hear the lies that are perpetrated mm-hmm. in the name of Jesus, but are simply so illogical as to attract derision.
So what was some that the other folks came up with? Give us a sample.
Give you a sampling, eh? I shall sample you, my friend. Someone, I posted, one thing you'll never hear a Hindu say, ah, well, you only live once. I'm finding it. Hold up. Ah, here we are. I'll read you from the top down because it's just, oh, shoot, there must be, I don't know, there must be 100 comments here.
Wow.
Guys, you know who you are that wrote this, but I'm just going to read out the, and these are good GRs coming up with wonderful things. The end time, pleading the blood, intercessory prayer. I know it's too, handling snakes.
Oh, I love it.
Don't swim on Sundays. I remember that. Forever burning in hell. Binding and loosing demons.
Mm.
Anoint buildings. Oh, God, I used to do that. Anoint the windowsills and the doors so no demons could come in.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Waiting for the 70th week of Daniel.
Oh, wow.
How Satan tempts us. And I said, well, Satan tempts me daily with booze and chocolate. Oh, come on. I have to blame someone. view more replies. Tithing.
Mm. Well, obviously, this list could go on for a long, long time.
Oh, and it does.
Now, that just makes me a proud papa to hear these guys'
yep.
voice from a simple statement like that, lies that Christianity has told them. And, boy, I mean, this is effusive. There's no hesitation at all as to what they have experienced.
They just kept coming like an open flowing faucet, mate.
That's wonderful.
The Easter Bunny, Santa Claus, asking Jesus to come into your heart, making Jesus your personal Lord and Savior. Mm-hmm. Family, I am so glad. I cannot tell you how glad I am that I listened to a tape 15 years ago. I cannot tell you how happy I am, how proud I am of the gospel, how happy I am that this stray tape happened across my path.
Mm.
This week we heard from Brenda Whitmer, who said this. Very interesting question. I am really enjoying the Tuesday Night Live Bible studies. By the way, family, they're on the front page at www.gospelrevolution.com. If you go to resources up top and go down to either watch or videos, you'll see that the Bible studies are there too. So there's two ways you can get to them, but you can just see it straight off the front page. She says, I'm really enjoying the Tuesday Night Live Bible studies. I had a question about the change that happened at the cross. Here it is. What exactly happened at Pentecost?
That is a question that is very timely right now in the Gospel Revolution. And I'll be right straightforward with you. I'm not sure. Let me tell you something I am sure of. It was not a fulfillment of the prophecy Joel.
Can we step back a little before we come up to that, mate?
We sure may.
Okay. The person who wrote the book of Acts, in which this is recorded, was a historian and a physician. Now, Luke's writings are very interesting in as much as near as we can tell, Luke is a quite a dispassionate reporter in this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if it looks bad for the apostles, good for the apostles. He writes it down as it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
When Michael is referring to Joel, you'll remember that he, quite dispassionately, Luke, refers to the fact that somebody said, and he reported it, that this was the fulfillment of Joel.
Mm-hmm. I think it was Peter, actually.
Well, I'm going to hand it back to you. I just felt that that was, we needed to
Yes.
Yeah.
So we're just looking into this, and I'm telling you, Don and I both are probably having to hold ourselves at bay because of Sean Smith this week, who called me and evidently called Don also.
Troublesome little snake ears.
And started pointing out some things in Acts chapter 1 that I had never seen. It's just as clear as it can be, but I'd never seen it. So whenever we do get into this, the one thing I want you to know is everything that we know about Acts chapter 1 came from Sean Smith.
Sean, you're not getting reordained. Don't think that there's anything in this for you.
Oh, man. But I, folks, I get excited when other people teach us things. We don't have any problem sharing credit where credit is due. I have a little problem with people who claim things that aren't true about what has been taught by whom, when, and where. And everybody knows that I get a little ruffle in my feathers about that because I don't like untruth. But sharing what other people have taught me, oh my gosh, I think we've proven that's something that we'll always do. But I'm not going to sit and agree that something happened that didn't happen. We have that happen all the time.
Yeah.
And we have people that try to disprove something happened that did happen. And it's like, come on, folks. We've got the largest preachers in the world who try to prove that they never heard of Mike Williams at all, and who are using all of my material.
Including in one case, a person who used our backdrop with Gospel Revolution written on it. Yes.
But that all to say, we will be going into Acts chapter 1, and I'm sure Don and I both have really wanted to just dive into this today, and we are holding it off. We should be able to go into it next week, because just the things that Sean Smith has pointed out without any research on our part whatsoever has been really factual. Insightful. Why didn't I see that? So we're very, very grateful for that. All of that to say, I really am not committed to a horse right now in this race about what Acts 2 is all about. Like I said, there are some discrepancies. There's some insights. As Don has pointed out to you, it's the first time you see Mary and James in the story. They obviously, from this point, became very embedded in Christianity. Mary and James, Mary becoming an icon in Catholicism, and this after the cross experience. And then James being brought in to the upper room where all this took place. So there is so much to look at, folks. I just have to tell you, you might say, well, why don't you think it's a fulfillment of the prophecy, Joel? Because Joel said that God's Spirit would be poured out upon all flesh, not to 200 people in a room by themselves. And everybody else would witness what happened to the small group. And that's what this story is. This story is about what happened to a small group. And it's also a story about how amazed everybody else was at them. Not that they got the same thing they did, but that the small group got it.
I don't think that I could add one thing to that except to say this. Every book starts with chapter one. I discovered this when I wanted to write a book of my own. I had to start at the first chapter. History books are no exception. In fact, they are even more liable for this. The whole book relies on chapter one to set the backdrop. The whole book of history depends on a foundation. And, of course, the foundation in Acts written by Luke is chapter one. And I wish I had the words to tease you. Do not miss next week. If Mike has said this is for next week,
yeah,
do not miss next week.
Vatican Radio, World News.
Now, in the news this week, Michael, we had Andy Stanley on a couple of problematic things. One is that he is holding false dilemmas out as being good logic. Bill Hybels is in the news. His church now has come out and said, well, no, we don't think that everything about Bill Hybels being a purpose-driven, I think I'll use the word deviant, simply because he deviated from his own Christian beliefs and Christian teaching in general, apparently with either adultery or with sexual misconduct. They have now come out and said, we don't think all the stories were just hot air. One of the girls who accused him has outright rejected the apology offered to her by the church. And I think that there is a lot more to this story that we're going to hear in the future, that there'll probably be law cases. It's just an awfully sad end to a ministry that inflamed many people with a desire to evangelize. But what can I say? Bill Hybels, who once hosted a presidential interview with President Obama, this guy was no fool. But when it comes to girls, I remember being taught in cemetery, I was taught that girls, gold, and glory will always get you if you let them. I guess that could be true. I don't know. But and then we have Jimmy Bakker. Jimmy Bakker this week is saying,
I have been in a time of meditation and prayer ever since Billy Graham passed on. And I know we're in a change. I know the world's changed. I know something's changed. And we're about to experience something that we've never had before. And I believe with all my heart, we're going to see and hear and feel judgment of God. I believe that really for the first time in the last days, we're going to enter in now where the things that begin to happen are going to be God's judgment. I believe judgment of God is coming, and it's coming right away.
Here we go again.
Jimmy Bakker, your wife, and you had a healing ministry, and she died of cancer. When will you learn to shut up? Jimmy Bakker, you are selling, you're back in the 50s selling bloody underground condos or underground tanks to live in when the end comes, when nuclear war comes. You're selling your little slop buckets full of food but to see people. You're making money again. You were put away in prison for making money wrongly, for being fraudulent. And I'm pretty sure you're doing the same thing again. Jimmy Bakker, when will you learn? Now, that is all in news of the world, but I want to take this opportunity to mention news of the world, which is far sadder to us and is in our very own backyard. You may have seen the video that Mike put to air, but I think Mike can tell you about that now.
Yes, it is. It's very sad, heartbreaking. You know, these folks in Nakuru, Kenya have really put their lives on the line. These folks were part of a raid that because of their attendance, Moses was arrested mistakenly, thinking that he was part of a political unrest that was going on simply because he was up speaking to people at the same time that this unrest happened a couple of years ago. And these people were part of that. And just about a week and a half ago, there was a dam break there in Kenya after a month long of rain. There had already been 100 people die in the floods there in Kenya. And there was a dam break. And the last I heard, well over 40 people had lost their lives. And sadly, for all of them, but also included in that number was, which we now have the total count of, there was five of our Bible school students there who died in that flood. The original count, first count was three. There was two or three others missing, and two others were recovered later. Yeah, our heart goes out to these guys. This is one of those points when I get mad, looking at Andrew Womack bringing in millions of dollars a year, at Joseph Prince bringing in millions of dollars a year, the Copelands, Kenneth E. Hagin. Dear Lord, who would ever go listen to this man? I've tried to listen to what he says, and there's so nothing there at all for nothing. It's hard to do. Millions coming in. And here we are. If we send funds to help these families, it's going to impede what we're doing. And we can't do that. So, you know, if there's anybody out there, if any of you guys have a desire to help out, get in contact with us, we'd be glad to pass any funds along. It would go from us to Moses, who would allocate those funds. But we just, the ministry just simply does not have funds to send. We just don't have it. I've sent some funds personally from my account, but it's really tough. it's tough knowing that this type of suffering is going on and you want to help these families out. But we just don't have the type of income to reach out in those ways. This ministry is to try to share truth with people and share the gospel with people. We do it on a shoestring budget, and everyone knows that if we had funds to ship over there to help these families, we'd certainly do it. But if you see Moses got to On, you might send encouragement his way. These were students that he recruited there for the school, and five of them are dead.
And so it is, friends and family, that we must leave you. If you would like to partner with us, and not just in money, call our office on
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate, or go to www.gospelrevolution.com and hit the connect link. That will get an email straight to us. It'll be confidential, and you will be able to tell us exactly how you'd like to participate. You can even hit the donate link, and we are opening up even more avenues by which you can give into this ministry. And what is a ministry, you ask? Anything you can do to help the gospel can make all the difference for somebody else just like you starting their own journey towards thinking for themselves. That's what our ministry is about. Looking at people who are trapped in religion and helping them to think for themselves. If you have any questions, feel free to record them on United States number 1234564097112345640971. 1234564097171. And remember, in the words of Mike Turi, gosh, it's hot here in Eva, Alabama. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Eva, Alabama.
And it's good night from Mike Williams right here in Palm Beach Gardens. We love you guys. We hope that you, as you've listened to this PowerCast, you temper it with the fact that our hearts are out to help people. And we just want you to know the reality of where we are. And we also want you to know the reality of the truth of the gospel. So give us any comments that you have, anything that would help us. The only way we can know if there are things that we do or say or what we do or how we do it on the PowerCast that are things that would be better done some other way is if we hear from you.
Yes.
We don't have another way to find that out. So, if you have anything that you'd like to say about the PowerCast, if we get two or three comments on the same thing, we're gonna up it. we're gonna change it.
We know that we've got to.
So anyway, we love you guys. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed today's PowerCast. But if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended, it doesn't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again, only
much better.
Been gone to church since I was a boy. Now I'm old and I'm low on joy. I feel tired. Is there something I missed? Or is it just that I'm a Methodist? I got the Methodist blues. Sit in the sanctuary Sunday morn. Minister talks about a being reborn. I got a load of guilt that I've been carrying. I wonder if I should have been Unitarian. The organ is soupy, the pastor is bland. I leave afterward and I shake his hand. Sometimes I'd like to shake my fist. That's what it's like to be Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. lot of odd people sitting in the pews want the sermon to reflect their views. Some of these Christians, they are the rudest. Maybe I ought to try being Buddhist. Our people gossip about who did what. The ladies' circle is a pain in the butt. I wanna slap their face or at least their wrist, but I can't cause I am a Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. It's not easy being Methodist. Troubles, we got a whole long list. We're too rational, too Socratic. I wish we were charismatic. The same 10 people always volunteer. Half of them old and the others just weird. I am blue and I'm getting more bluish. Maybe Jewish. Ah, everyone is afraid of change. Don't like anything new or strange. We get our underwear in a twist, and that's how it is with the Methodist. I got the Methodist blues. By John Wesley, not Chuck Berry or Elvis Presley. We're not so hip, but we persist. We go on being Methodist. We got the Methodist blues. When we die and go up in the air, St. Peter will hold out a diadem and say, shh, there are Baptists in there. They thought it would just be them. And if a Baptist you happen to meet, they may regard you as a foreigner. We got Catholics across the street and Muslims right around the corner. Oh, I got the Methodist blues. Oh, I got the Methodist blues.
Gospel revolution.